This podcast is supported by The RealReal. Meet Christine. She loves shopping. And this is the sound of fashion overload. Too many fabulous things, not enough space. So Christine started selling with The RealReal.
I've always loved collecting designer pieces. Gucci bags, Prada heels. But my style keeps evolving. Selling with The RealReal? Game changer. I earn more and they do everything.
Seriously, just drop off your items or schedule a pickup. We handle the photos, descriptions, pricing, even shipping. You just sit back and watch your items sell fast to our 40 million members.
And I get peace of mind knowing I earn more selling with The RealReal than anywhere else.
Exactly. That's the sound of your closet working for you. The RealReal. Earn more, save time, sell fast. And only for the month of January, earn up to $550 extra when you sell with The RealReal. That's right, up to $550 extra. Go to TheRealReal.com to get started. Earn up to $550 extra this month at TheRealReal.com. Terms apply.
From the unexplained to the mundane, come join us on a journey to the fringe.
Hello and welcome to Journey to the Fringe, where we like to keep our fringeness fresh. So it's almost like a Frenchness, which I've now said out loud, and it doesn't sound like a great word. So we're just going to keep calling it fringeness. We are your Fringe podcast hosts, Taylor and Chelsea. Here today, you know what? I don't think it's fresh because we actually talked about this topic. So I'm fairly confident in saying it's an old topic, in fact.
Is it?
I don't know. It's up to you, Chelsea, because we talked about it, but you do what you do. I don't know what you've done in the last week, so.
You know what? I almost changed the topic on you. That way, this would have all been wrong, but lucky for you, I decided not to do it, because I didn't want to do that to you. So.
Okay, Chelsea, just before we move off, it's kind of weird that we pronounce it topic and not topic.
Yeah, you're right, because there's other words where it is pronounced topic.
Yeah.
And another word.
Yeah.
Not topic. Like, you don't pronounce that different ways each time, but within other words, sometimes it's topic. Anyhow, today, we're not talking about how you pronounce topic or topic, depending on, I don't know, your accent, I guess.
Just how strange you are. You strange people.
Today, I'm talking about ley lines. And if you've never heard of ley lines before, you can think of ley lines as like the opposite of the equator, kind of. But instead of cutting the world in half, it cuts the world into very random segments because ley lines connect various historic structures, prehistoric sites, and landmarks that have a sort of otherworldly power to them or association, maybe, such as like the pyramids, Stonehenge, Machu Picchu. What else would be on there? I don't know. Other things. There are other ones on there that I cannot think of right now.
I'm sure of it.
Oh, maybe like Coral Castle. I don't know if that would be on a ley line. I don't know why that's the only one I'm thinking of right now.
We've never done a Coral Castle episode either.
No. Anyhow, you get the idea of what I'm saying, even though we're lost for anything other than those three things, four things, if Coral Castle counts.
I'm pretty sure the pyramids are technically on them, as they say.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I said pyramids.
Oh, yeah.
So that counts as the same one that I said.
There's more than one pyramid.
All the pyramids. Oh, yeah. Every single pyramid would be on a ley line. You're right for that.
Yeah. So the, you know what? Probably Atlantis, too. We just don't know where it is to put it on the ley line.
Yeah, let's go with Atlantis, too. I'm sure someone would argue that. And funny enough, it might come up in this episode. So the general belief.
So, Chelsea.
Yeah.
Just before you explain it to us, I just want to make sure it's not a place where you can just lay down and have a good nap.
I wish, because I would be there so fast, and I would also say that I'm nowhere near a ley line if that was the case. But no. The idea of a ley line is developed in the early 20th century Europe. The general belief is that the alignments were recognized by ancient societies, leading them to build structures along them, perhaps to harness their power, perhaps to guide UFOs, perhaps that ancient humans were in tune with some ethereal force, largely unobserved by modern man, and constructed their sacred places in specific spots where that force was strongest, whether it was to take advantage of the energy, maybe draw on the energy. I don't know. I don't think anybody really knows. And that's what we think of it now. Ley lines, but the idea was developed in the early 20th century Europe. Reverend Edward Duke thought up the idea that sacred sites might have been constructed in alignment with one another in 1846 when he observed that some medieval churches aligned with each other. That's kind of the first ever idea of something like this. And in 1909, Wilhelm Eude in Germany argued that the presence of linear alignments connected various sites and suggested that they had religious and astronomical function. And then in Germany, the idea is referred to as, insert German name here because I am not even attempting this one, sorry guys, but those words equal holy lines, and it was adopted by some proponents of Nazism. Funny. That is not Nazism is not funny, but just
no, but it really liked that. To take up the alternative spirituality, like that yes. was Nazism. They loved like Tibet, Shangri-La. They really liked Atlantis. They really just anything that was like alternative history, they loved.
It's amazing. When we like started this podcast, we had the original idea that we like just do the talking, and we had no idea in that general brainstorming session that Nazism would come up so much on this podcast. It's crazy.
Yeah, it's, you know what, the one thing I did learn is how much like conspiracy lore is grounded in white supremacy and Nazism.
Oh yeah.
Well, I shouldn't even say white supremacy. Ethnocentricity is probably a better word, because every lost continent has had somebody who's trying to persecute a minority group, lay claim to them as part of them.
Yeah. And with all how much esotericism, I think that's how you probably say that word in that context, went on with it. It makes for some good lore around the Nazis as well, with kind of this otherworldliness. But this episode is not about the Nazis. It just so happened to come up again. So that's kind of the first rumblings of an idea of what they're going for with ley lines and what it eventually comes to be. And then along comes Alfred Watkins. And he's an English antiquarian, which is someone who studies old things like artifacts, historic sites, archives, manuscripts, so on. He was also a successful businessman and an amateur archaeologist. He also was a big fan of photography. And he really develops the idea and laid the foundation of ley lines. And he puts this forth in his book titled The Old Straight Track in the 1920s. He argues that straight lines could be drawn between various historic structures and that these represented trade routes created by ancient British societies. And I must say at this time, we are specifically speaking about the UK.
Okay, yeah, the great British Empire of 3000 BC, of course.
Yeah. According to his account, he was driving across the hills near Blackwardine, Herefordshire. I do speak English, but not this kind of English.
No, not English English. You just speak the regular English, the inferior language that cannot convey what the aliens want, yes.
And when he looked across the landscape, he observed the way that several features lined up together. He subsequently began drawing lines across his ordnance survey maps, developing the view that ancient British people had tended to travel in straight lines, using marked points along the landscape to guide them. Watkins said that he was unhampered by other theories and that his observations were yielding astounding results in all districts. He further theorized that starting at any one point along the line and traveling along it would also reveal sites not mapped on maps, such as forest glades, trenches, or notches on crested hills. In his book, The Old Straight Track, he drew upon earlier research citing the work of astronomer Norman Lockyer, who argued that ancient alignments might be oriented to sunrise and sunset at solstices. Watkins referred to these as lays, and the term lay was derived from the Old English term for a cleared space, with Watkins adopting it for his lines because he found it to be part of the place names of various settlements that were along the lines he traced.
So, Chelsea, just so I'm on the same page as you, does that not mean that the original guy was just saying that these are basically on the same lateral level? Because they would experience sunrise and sunset at the same time, which is what they're connoting.
Yes. I mean, right now, this is literally sites that are within the same area and not a far distance from each other. Literally, he could stand on a hill and see that they were all aligned.
Okay, never mind. That they literally are the same line because they're within 20 kilometers of each other.
Yeah, basically. And at this point, and for most of this episode, which I find super strange, we don't really leave Britain. This whole ley line thing has come strictly from Britain. For some weird reason, other things don't get tied to it for a while.
It kind of sounds like it's because the British thought it was their way of being superior to others.
Could be.
So nobody else really wanted to adopt it.
Yeah, either that or they didn't want to think of anything outside of Britain, maybe?
Yeah, they don't tell the commoners about it, just the British folk.
Yeah, it only applies to them. So Watkins also observes the recurrence of, quote, Cole and, quote, Dodd in English place names, thus suggesting that the individual...
This podcast is supported by The Real Real. Meet Christine. She loves shopping. And this is the sound of fashion overload. Too many fabulous things, not enough space. So Christine started selling with The Real Real.
I've always loved collecting designer pieces. Gucci bags, Prada heels. But my style keeps evolving. Selling with The Real Real? Game changer. I earn more, and they do everything.
Seriously, just drop off your items or schedule a pickup. We handle the photos, descriptions, pricing, even shipping. You just sit back and watch your items sell fast to our 40 million members.
And I get peace of mind knowing I earn more selling with The Real Real than anywhere else.
Exactly. This? That's the sound of your closet working for you. The Real Real. Earn more, save time, sell fast. And only for the month of January, earn up to $550 extra when you sell with The Real Real. That's right, up to $550 extra. Go to TheRealReal.com to get started. Earn up to $550 extra this month at TheRealReal.com. Terms apply.
Individuals who established these lines were referred to as Coleman or Dodman. And so, clarify that a little bit. So here's what I'm talking about with the Dodman paste. Come on, you son of a bitch.
You just want me to Google something? Oh, sorry, are you sharing your screen?
No.
Oh, okay.
I should have just shared my screen.
Yeah.
If I'm really thinking about it now, I wouldn't be having so many problems. I could have just showed you the original one. Here we go.
Okay.
It's the second one in. There's a chalk geoglyph depiction of a man in the side of a hill in Sussex holding what looks like two sticks called, quote, the long man of Wilmington.
Is he? Unquote. Or is he just doing a shoulder stretch in a doorway?
I've held
that pose specifically before.
Yeah, and then you can't keep your arms down?
Yeah. Well, no. Yeah. It's more so to stretch out your shoulders. Like you put your arms on there and then you lean forward.
See, that's what I did as shoulders. A kid, where you go in the doorway and you hold your hands there, and then you leave, and then your arms go up.
Yeah, but no, if you look, his hands are clearly a little bit past the door frame so that he can hold himself there while he pushes forward to stretch out his shoulders.
Yeah, this is how you relieve your shoulder tension.
It's in the ley lines, guys.
The Long Man of Wilmington, in which Watkins proposed that this is a depiction of an individual measuring where the ley lines are.
Oh man, the next guy has a very awkward penis.
Hold on, I need to go look at this. Yep, that is very awkward. We're not going to put this Stodman on there, we're going to put the next guy with the awkward penis.
The Cern Abbas giant? Okay.
Although Watkins gained a small following, Watkins's ideas were never accepted by British archaeological establishment, a fact that frustrated him. There's a lot of things about this that were frustrating to him. His critics noted that his ideas relied on drawing lines between sites established at different periods of the past. Obviously, his ley lines didn't have any magical connotations to it. These are literally just, they all seem to be in a straight line, and he was saying that it was for trade routes and stuff like that. There's nothing mystical about it.
And also, if it's for trade route, that doesn't make any sense why it would need to be a straight line. If anything, trade routes, in fact, are not straight lines unless you're on an airplane.
Yeah, that's my next sentence. They also argued that in prehistory, as in the present, it was impractical to travel in a straight line across hilly or mountainous areas of Britain. Not that they're that you know, mountainous, rendering his lays unlikely as trade route. They also argued that Britons would not have been sophisticated enough to produce such accurate measurements across the landscape. In 1926, advocates of Watkins's beliefs established the Straight Track Club to assist this growing body of enthusiasts who were looking for their own ley lines in the landscape. In 1927, Watkins published the Lay Hunter's Manual. And Watkins dies in 1935, and the club went on without him, however, became inactive after the Second World War and eventually disbanded, and ley lines just kind of fade into obscurity in the 1935s. So that is until the 60s when Watkins' ideas are revived in various forms by the countercultural Earth Mysteries movement. What a weird countercultural movement. So
basically just the hippies, right?
Basically, yeah.
Okay.
So starting sometime in the 40s through
the... Did the hippies like need to like stretch out their shoulders? And they found this like giant in Wilmington who's like, oh, I've got a strength for you.
He never comes up again.
Oh,
he is forgotten by time until I bring this up. Be honest with you. Nobody's ever talked about him since.
I haven't heard of
Watkins.
Now.
So, starting sometime in the 40s through the 60s, the archaeological establishment blossoms in Britain. Just fucking takes off. And this is due to a variety of university courses coming available on the subject, which allows the discipline to become professionalized. Goodbye, amateur archaeologist. Hello, Earth Mysteries, I presume. But also don't presume, because I don't think those go hand in hand. So, cut to the 60s when a counterculture movement comes in, and ley lines go from trade routes to invisible energy lines of sacred significance or mystical power. They were lines of power that passive some form of spiritual force or energy accessible to our ancient ancestors, but now lost to narrow-minded 20th century scientific thought. So we really have a weird head coming about with archaeology becoming professionalized and then these earth mystery groups coming about, which are like, you guys are just like book nerds that do everything by the book and they're not getting along. In his book published in 1961, Skyways and Landmarks, Tony Wedd published his idea that Watkins' lays were both real and served as ancient markers to guide alien spacecraft that were visiting Earth. He came to this conclusion after comparing Watkins' idea with those of French ufologist Aimé Michel, who argued for the existence of orthotennies.
I've never heard of those.
Neither have I. Lines along which alien spacecraft traveled. Wedd suggested that either spacecraft were following the prehistoric landmarks for guidance, or that both the lays and the spacecraft were following a magnetic current flowing across the Earth.
Might I just say, that makes more sense than a friggin' trade route.
It does. I can pick this up. I think the guy was kind of on to something, but he didn't know quite what. But this guy, after Watkins is the guy to like name ley lines and come up with it. And then Tony Wedd comes along, and this is the first mention of anything mystical of any sort about the ley lines. So that's 1961. You know what? I'm more behind this theory than just like, hey, they can see this one, so they just tried to build everything in a straight line.
They walked between them, yeah.
They weren't allowed to deviate. All of Britain is on a straight line.
I mean, what is Britain but a straight line of a country?
It's true. That's the first guy in the Earth Mysteries movement, I guess. And so in comes John Mitchell, and he's an esotericist who comes in and promotes these ideas to a wider audience than even Tony Wedd, I guess. I'm not sure why it was so much bigger, but John Mitchell publishes a book in 1967, so this is 6 years after, and it's called The Flying Saucer Vision. Obviously, the ancient astronaut theory is brought up in detail and basically just says this is the time of the ancient astronaut theory. I mean, this is around the time probably that Eric von Daniken published his book, and there is just a mess. This would be it. Actually, now that I'm thinking of it, the huge Earth Mysteries movement. There is a huge, like, golden era of ancient astronaut. I mean, we have the TV show now, but this was where all these books were published. They were in in the sweet spot of like UFO weirdness and everything at that time. And you could just make shit up.
Well, yeah, that was the important part. There's kind of two things. One, it's hard to get perfect information from your end to actually research it. And two, nobody's going to check if you're lying at the time, which is fantastic.
Oh, no. And they just ate it up. Like, it was like, oh, people are already talking about this. I'm going to jump in on it. And I'm going to say the exact same stuff, but I'm going to make stuff up along the way. And people are going to fucking love this. Anyhow, he's talking about the ancient astronaut theory. And it's brought up in detail. And basically, it's just saying that aliens were here assisting humans and were looked at as gods. You know the theory. Blah, blah, blah. They left because we became too materialistic and technology focused, but one day they're gonna return if we reactivate the ancient centers. Same old story in every freaking ancient astronaut book. He writes another book in 1969, which is pretty much the same stuff as you do at that time, called The View Over Atlantis. And you probably know exactly what this book is about too. It's described as one of the founding documents of the modern Earth Mysteries movement. He becomes quite prominent in the Earth Mysteries movement at the time. And get this, he comes from yet another wealthy British family. I don't know how many times it comes up. These people just are filthy rich. He's actually well connected on his mother's side to like dukes, someone that was the mayor of London, or like lots of political connections there. He's just wealthy. He's just like, I want in on this. Apparently like a renowned pot smoker for all of his life. Dies of lung cancer. And he just writes weird books. He wrote so many books. I just have to tell you some of the things he wrote about, which included the Shakespeare authorship question, a book on Adolf Hitler quote, and a book condemning Salman Rushdie.
You know, during normal things that people do.
Normal things. It's so weird.
Chelsea, to be fair, you could have just called it celebrity quotes. We didn't need to know it was only one celebrity and the celebrity was Hitler.
Yeah, would you call him a celebrity?
He's a celebrity. Then, would you not see he's a celebrity?
On the last page, it's like, surprise, these quotes are from Adolf Hitler. He also writes a book condemning Salman Rushdie during the Satanic Verses controversy and so on, which is something I apparently need to learn more about. Anyhow, back to Layla.
This podcast is supported by The RealReal. Meet Christine. She loves shopping. And this is the sound of fashion overload. Too many fabulous things, not enough space. So Christine started selling with The RealReal.
I've always loved collecting designer pieces. Gucci bags, Prada heels. But my style keeps evolving. Selling with The RealReal? Game changer. I earn more and they do everything.
Seriously, just drop off your items or schedule a pickup. We handle the photos, descriptions, pricing, even shipping. You just sit back and watch your items sell fast to our 40 million members.
And I get peace of mind knowing I earn more selling with The RealReal than anywhere else.
Exactly. This? That's the sound of your closet working for you. The RealReal. Earn more, save time, sell fast. And only for the month of January, earn up to $550 extra when you sell with The RealReal. That's right, up to $550 extra. Go to TheRealReal.com to get started. Earn up to $550 extra this month at TheRealReal.com. Terms apply.
And I just thought it was funny because it comes up so much that these people just take up these weird hobbies because they're like rich. Anyhow, back to ley lines. Here, which is his book, The View Over Atlantis, he interpreted ley lines by reference to the Chinese concept of geomagnetic energy lines, which he transliterated as Lung Mei, which equaled dragon veins. He proposed that an advanced ancient society that had once covered much of the world had established ley lines across the landscape to harness this Lung Mei energy. Translating the term Lung Mei as dragon pass, he interpreted tales from English mythology and folklore in which heroes killed dragons so that the dragon slayers became the villains. Hutton later noticed that Mitchell's idea embodied a fervent religious feeling, which though not Christian, was heavily influenced by Christian models, adopting an evangelical and apocalyptic tone that announced the coming of an age of Aquarius in which ancient wisdom would be restored. Michelle invented various claims about archaeological evidence to suit his purpose, and he viewed archaeologists as antagonists, seeing them as the personification of the modern materialism he was railing against. While John Michelle Mitchell is working on his heavy hitter Atlantis book, the lay hunting community is taking form because there was already kind of the rise with the two books, which was John Michelle's first book and the Tony Wed one, which kind of bursts this lay hunting community, where in 1962, a group of ufologists get to work establishing the Lay Hunters Club. Michelle's book being most of the inspiration for it, they just get together and travel around Britain trying to identify ley lines connecting various historic structures and sites. And still at this time, it's only Britain, oddly enough.
Despite the fact that we've gotten into Chinese mythology. Interesting.
I know, isn't it? It's super weird. It's still like 1962. You would think they'd come out of Britain. Nope. Churches were particularly favored by the lay hunters, who often worked at the assumption that such churches had almost always been built atop pre-Christian sacred sites. Not sure why. Doesn't say. They don't give any reasoning. In the 70s and 80s, there is a huge increase in publications on ley lines just because of kind of what's going on in the community at that time. We also see a huge pickup during that time of just like UFO topics, as we see with even Roswell was around that time, right? Yeah, the 70s, right?
Yeah, that's where it comes back.
Yeah, so I think it's just, you know, the culture going on at the time. So Philip Heselton, Leyline Enthusiast, he establishes Ley Hunter magazine in 1965, edited at some points by Paul Screeton, who also wrote the book Quicksilver Heritage, in which he argued that the Neolithic period had seen an idyllic society devoted to spirituality, but that this was brought to an end through the introduction of metal technologies in the Bronze Age. He argued that this golden age could nevertheless be restored. I guess ley lines and ancient astronauts go hand in hand now that I think about it. This kind of makes sense, right? Because of the ancient structures that are bestowed upon us by the gods that were made by them. And the
yeah,
gods
of course, in a straight line.
Aliens. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I mean,
of course, what you're going to do is just completely disregard geography and just build something, go up, drive in a straight line, and then build the next one, go up and continue that straight line and build the next one, regardless of geography.
If you think about it, in not just Britain, but the world, I mean, you can connect pretty much anything with a straight line.
That's the fun thing about a sphere. You can make straight lines pretty easy.
Yeah. So part of the popularity of ley hunting was that individuals without any form of professional training in archaeology could take part in this and feel that they could rediscover the magical landscapes of the past. Which I think is hilarious because in this episode, we've seen the professionalization of archaeology and these people are straight up wanting to keep it amateur and not have any like professionalism or research to back it up at all. They're just like, you guys suck. You're professionals. You know what you're doing and you just don't agree with us. So we want to have nothing to do with you.
No, it's kind of funny when professionalism completely disregards your thing. So the only people who do it are not professionals.
Yeah, no, and that's completely it. So I find that hilarious. And they're like, we hate you too. And we just have this mutual hatred of each other because we just don't agree that this is a thing. Ley hunting welcomed those who had a strong interest in the past, but felt excluded from the narrow confines of orthodox academia. They took you in if you just didn't know what you were doing.
That's an interesting way to put it.
Yeah, it was a safe spot for the idiots that couldn't get in.
Who got made fun of by the geologists.
Yeah, I got rejected again from the archaeology university, and they're like, you have a safe place here, the Ley Lines Hunters group. And they fully integrate it with other esoteric practices like numerology and dowsing, because you might as well at that point. And hey, I have nothing to say about numerology and dowsing. I just think it's hilarious that they're just trying to make it even less scientific, I guess. It was also made up of people from all walks of life, except those professionals, of course.
Now, if you actually know what you're talking about, completely not allowed.
No.
Banned.
And there's different classes of people, different political opinions, cryptids, just kidding. Bigfoot wasn't there. And within such an eclectic variety of individuals, of course, that meant the understanding of ley lines very greatly, which included everything from leys mark a pre-existing energy current, and others believe that what they were building there was to help direct the energy. And my thought is that these people are way too into this. Like, they built this entire community that's made up of non-professionals, because professionals are not allowed. Only if you're a professional somewhere else and have no idea what you're talking about when it comes to this.
Yeah, it honestly feels like somebody was laughed at by a geologist once and they said, screw you, I'm going to start this club because you're not allowed now.
And it's going to, we're not even going to have any basis in reality. And,
no, you told me this is wrong. Well, guess what? It's the only right thing in the world now.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it's so funny because when there's no professionals and, like, they don't even have an opinion on it, just, of course, you're going to get everybody with, like, every opinion under the sun about what ley lines are because, like, why not? Why not? And with so many differing opinions, they all do agree on this thing, which is that the leys were laid out between 5,000 BCE and 26,000 BCE. That's the only thing apparently they agree on, is where the ley lines are coming into existence.
Wait, I just want to make sure I have this right then. They're not all laid out at the same time. They're laid out over a 20,000 year period then, correct?
Yeah, you can interpret it that way.
Okay.
I
think that's the more beneficial to their opinion way of laying it out.
I was thinking of it more of, like, they all came into existence at once in,
but they just don't know within that 20,000 period when.
Yeah. I mean, either way could be interpreted, and that's the thing when nobody's a professional weighing in on this.
Well, and they're not going to specify either, let's face it.
I just love that there's, like, this is the only thing they agreed on.
Yeah, that's okay. They're doing their best.
I gotta say, if I was in this club, I wouldn't even agree with this. I'd be like, ley lines are earth energy, obviously, is what I would think they were. They're an energy grid within the earth, and so they've always been there. And these guys think that they were made within these time frames. So I don't even know what the fuck they're thinking, but they agree on it, all of them. So they just live their lives doing this, arguing with the professional archaeologists and taking a liking to...
I would also like to point out, most of the things that I know are on ley lines were not built prior to 5000 BCE either.
Oh, but they were.
Okay, never mind. I am mistaken.
Yeah, you are. Maybe it's just this one particular club. I have no fucking idea. They seem pretty scattered, if I was to be honest with you. Obviously, nobody's like a professional.
Chelsea, they are doing their best with what they have, which is not a lot of instruction.
Their society's rejects. They just live their lives doing this, arguing with the professional archaeologists, and they take a liking to archaeoastronomers because they like their arguments for sophisticated astronomer priests. And that is that, like, well, priests, I don't know, but from my understanding of that is that things are connected with solstices and constellations and stuff from these historic sites, right? Yeah. In the 1980s, scholars Tom Williamson and Liz Bellamy tried to approach ley lines with a scientific mindset, and ultimately, their findings highlighted a crucial error with the theory, and this is why they fucking hate professionals. I am just gonna say it. Williamson and Bellamy's findings did not outright disprove the existence of ley lines, but they did cast a fair amount of reasonable doubt. Essentially, by examining the locations of various archaeological sites across England, they discovered that there was such a high density of landmarks that it was essentially possible to draw a straight line in any direction and connect multiple locations. That is, anyone could create a map of ley lines. Researcher Tom Brooks argued that keen mathematicians lived in Britain as far back as 5,000 years ago, before the Greeks had even invented geometry. He, like Watkins, examined ancient sites, 1500 to be precise, and found that they had all been built on a series of isosceles triangles, each one guiding ancient humans to the next.
Okay, I guess technically you could build them on isosceles triangles and still have them all on straight lines.
I think at this point it's shifting a little from lines to triangles.
Oh, okay. Okay. The more powerful.
Which I've never heard. Lay triangles. It doesn't roll off the tongue as nice.
No, but the lines will intersect because at this point there's so many, I would assume, places that you're trying to account for.
Oh yeah.
That there's gonna be several lines and they will cross, creating triangles.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. In theory, Brooks's findings would support the existence of ley lines. But to highlight how skewed this data was, Matt Parker of the University of London School of Mathematics at Queen Mary cheekily applied Brooks's techniques of drawing ley line maps to Woolworth stores. I like this part. Quote, "We know so little about the ancient Woolworth stores," he jokingly told The Guardian in 2010, "but we do still know their locations. I thought that if we analyzed the sites, we could learn more about what life was like in 2008 and how these people went about buying cheap kitchen accessories and discount CDs. Evidently, three Woolworth stores around Birmingham formed an exact equilateral triangle. It was a remarkable discovery, one that fit his hypothesis," he said, "by skipping over the vast majority and only choosing a few that happened to line up." Parker's tongue-in-cheek experiment effectively reached the same conclusion as Williamson and Bellamy's research. By choosing a limited set of data from a larger pool, it can be used to support just about any argument.
Well, it bothers me that he chose Woolworths and not places that sells Lay's potato chips.
I think Lay's is Canadian.
No, Frito-Lay's is a huge company. It's international. But, oh yeah, for sure. But why wouldn't you do Lay's lines as opposed to ley lines? Like, I feel like he missed out on a really good marketing opportunity.
Oh, it's US based.
Yeah, they own Pepsi too. Or sorry, Pepsi owns them.
A subsidiary of PepsiCo.
Yeah. Okay, also owns Taco Bell and Pizza Hut. Like, what? They own a ton, yeah. They own a ton.
That would make sense. All those big companies own everything.
Yeah.
Anyhow, their book brought about two different responses from the ley hunters. In my response, I say only two. I guess this is another one that they agree on. So, some maintained that this could not be recorded with empirical evidence and rational argumentation that archaeologists in all their professionalism were too narrow-minded to comprehend the theory.
These guys know too much about this one topic.
They can't even get their mind around it because academics, am I right? The other was to further engage archaeologists by seeking out new data and arguments to bolster their beliefs. The Ley Hunter magazine ceased publication in 1999. Its last editor, Danny Sullivan, stated that the idea of leys were dead. Hutton suggested that some of the enthusiasm formerly directed towards leys was instead directed towards archaeoastronomy. He also noted that the ley hunting community had functioned as an indispensable training ground for a small but important group of non-academic scholars who have made a genuine contribution to the study of folklore. That being said, beliefs in ancient earth energies have passed so far into the religious experience of New Age, counterculture of Europe and America, that it is unlikely that any test of evidence would bring about an end to belief in them. Which is a true enough statement, and I mean, by any professional archaeological or anything that studies like the pyramids or anything like that, ley lines are a pseudo-archaeology and a pseudoscience. So yeah, that's ley lines. Do you have any question or anything that you think needs to be added?
No, and I honestly think that ley lines reached their peak right around the time that Dan Brown's book The Da Vinci Code came out as a movie, because I think they're in that, and that's really where they reached their peak. Yes.
Well, there's a lot of things, and I couldn't exactly find like a list of where ley lines come up, but I believe...
Yeah. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I know they've been mentioned even in this podcast before. Came up with that abduction case in which one of them received the download of data. And
oh, yeah. Rendlesham Forest.
Rendlesham Forest came up there before. I think he got the download in like Morse code or something. And eventually he just like translates it into all these different significant areas that would be on these ley lines.
Yeah, it was binary. He got it in.
Binary, yes. And like, it comes up in Dan Brown's book. It comes up. It definitely comes up in all these things.
But I personally like the fact that it's a group of people who refuse to be educated on the topic in which they're researching.
Yeah.
Who, like, exclusively do this entire topic.
I wonder if in the research, they just reach a point where they're like, I feel like I'm getting to know too much about ley lines.
I'm actually too much of a... Yeah, I'm an archaeologist now, so unfortunately I have to leave the group because now I don't believe in them.
I'm going to have to retire. Yeah.
Yeah.
I just know too... And it's not even like I don't believe in them. It's probably just that they might know too much about archaeology or ley lines or something. They just... can't have that.
Yeah, because every now and then you'll hear it in like sophisticated talk, ley lines. And I shouldn't say sophisticated, that's not quite the right word for it, but it comes up where you don't expect it.
Yeah.
And nobody really knows enough about it to disprove it. So I'm glad to hear that it's a group of entirely unsophisticated individuals who have done everything involved in this.
Well, I want to say, but people do know enough to disprove it, and those people don't believe in it.
Yeah.
But that's the point that I made in that one of my last sentences there, is that now it's so intertwined in the New Age counterculture that it's unlikely that there would be any evidence in which people would believe that it's not there, because it's also this like, well, stick it to the man, like they know too much about archaeology and therefore they don't know anything about
no they're life. In too deep they're in too deep yeah,
they're just like not of the like higher realm that we're a yeah. part of.
Honestly, it was never mentioned, but you know, if you did a little more digging, the term like Rothschild and like Bilderberg group eventually comes up with the archaeologists who are educated.
And I mean, ley lines themselves, I think, are kind of an interesting thing to look at, because I guess there's people who are just looking for, in the end, a connectedness between, even if you look at the pyramids in Giza, you look at the pyramids in, like, there's pyramids on all continents, and yes, it's
a
pretty popular shape.
But at the same time, it's selectively picking what is in a straight line. That is always the problem.
Yeah, but I mean, if you take a pyramid in Egypt and a pyramid in Mexico and a pyramid here, yeah. I mean...
Well, no matter what, if you pick two things, they're going to be in a straight line. It's just picking that third thing which adds to the straight line.
Yeah, in that part, it's making some sort of weird grid. But I think it's just people looking for an interconnectedness, that there's more to what meets the eye in the end, I guess.
Yeah, and it makes a lot of sense that, yeah. once again, we had an ethnocentric group who picked up on this.
Yeah, it literally no other...
Nobody else.
On the map.
It's the Nazis and the uneducated. That's all that go into this.
In Britain and Germany, that's literally the only places we talked about here, other than what I added, saying pyramids in Egypt.
Hey, and Chelsea, in fact, you are not an educated archaeologist, are you?
So I'm a part of this group.
Yeah. Whether you want it or not, you've been now officially become part of them.
I guess I have. I can't argue with that. I just did an episode on ley lines. Mm-hmm. One of them.
And I think with that, I have been Taylor, here with Chelsea. We are Journey to the Fringe. Thank you all for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Yeah.
Thank you for listening to Journey to the Fringe. If you have liked what you have listened to, please like, share, subscribe, or follow, depending on what venue you are listening to us through. Also, please, if possible, leave a 5-star review, as that really helps us in the algorithms. Should you wish to interact with us, please check us out on your social media of choice. I bet you we are there. And if you really want to communicate with us and give us ideas for new episodes, or tell us that we're wrong and terrible, either way, please send us an email at journeytothefringe@gmail.com. For now, I'll see you in the next episode.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.